And a very good morning to you, and welcome to Lifeline on this Thursday morning with myself, Debbie McMahon, here with you till 11 o'clock this morning. I'm actually joined in the studio now with Gerry Cooley.
How are you?
And he's going to be joining me for the show today, talking a little bit about what's up and coming around Halloween. And I suppose maybe we're getting into the Christmas time as well, now, just as soon as Halloween goes.
Don't mention Christmas, please. I'll fall off the chair.
But that's it, the months are just flying by. But we have Roddy Collins joining us in the studio with his new book, The Rodfather, and we're looking forward to that. A few times he was to come in and situations happened between myself and him, and then it was cancelled. But
he
today
he can't get away with it any longer.
No. So he's coming in today at about 10 o'clock to talk to us. Now, as I said, I'm joined in the studio with Gerry Cooley. It's been a while, Gerry, since we've been together in the studio.
Well, you know, well, you're after forgetting you interviewed me a couple of about 2 or 3 months ago. Maybe it wasn't you. Maybe it was some other beautiful young lady. I can't remember. Anyway, yeah, it's great to see you, and always listening to your show. Always interesting. Your medical stuff is really spellbinding. You know, like, how can you drag the menopause out for 10 solid years?
It's not like, and if any women are listening to you, you better be very careful, Jerry.
No. There is a male menopause.
Very important,
and I'm delving into that. I'm going into that. I was down in...
Do you know what that's called? Do you know what it's called?
What?
Andropause.
Okay.
Well, now, you're well past that, this age, anyway.
Well, we were down in Kyle's last Christmas, myself and Terry Lee, my fellow guitar player. We just there in Ad Hoc, in the old man's pub, they call it, in the village of Coolock, just down the road. And I shouted about, one of them knew I was on Near FM, and I said, does anybody know a cure for the male menopause? And all the men held up the pint of Guinness. There you are, Jerry. That idiot.
What the male menopause is called, isn't it? The midlife crisis.
It's all sorts of stuff, you know.
Yeah, but it is a very... I know we're joking here, but it's a very important subject.
Oh, of course it is. Of course it is. But you do go on.
I don't. I just highlight it. When people ask me to highlight, I
hadn't heard you for 4 years, and I switched on the radio, and you were still on that sentence 4 years later. It was the same sentence.
No,
I'm just kidding. You do a great job. You do great incisive stuff, and I love listening to it.
Good. We missed you at the Golden Years. We had a great day down there last week with the all the people down in Golden Years. Really, really good.
Yeah, I was there last time. I really enjoyed it. It was good crack, and of course the maestro was there.
So John big Markey. Hello to all the. They go every day. It's opened every day from Monday to Friday. It's a great facility for older people. They have arts and music.
Lovely.
It's just brilliant.
The feet were danced off me. Last time, yeah.
You had a competitor this time. Paul Murray. He was great, yeah.
Very good.
Yeah, well, no, it's great. And that's the facility over there in Darndale called Golden Years. So we're going to talk a little bit about Halloween. Tell us a little bit. Is there anything taking place around the Santry area, around North East?
Well, not really. Personally, I don't like Halloween. I think the paganism comes out in society for that night, the lead up to it. Mm-hmm. There's something about Halloween that always unnerved me a little bit. And with the bonfires and the alcohol and the noise and all of that. And that's always been the way with me, and although I did take part in it, we did the dressing up and going around the houses, you know, any apples or nuts, cigarettes or butts, all that old stuff, hanging the apple out of the door. You're probably too young to remember all that, but Iha Hauna is a pagan festival, and it goes back to pagan times. Like, we were only Christianized here in the 4th century. We were the last country in Europe to get Christianity.
Why?
Absolutely.
Ireland,
we were the last one.
You wouldn't think that, would you?
Well, geez, you only have to look around. Like, definitely. The paganism is still here. It's underneath. And so we were Christianised, of course, by St. Patrick in 432. They say the 5th century. But before that, we were pagan. We had all the pagan festivals. And the pagan festival, Iha Hauna, it's the night, Hauna, the night of darkness. It's when summer breaks down completely. The light is gone and no growing anymore. So they stocked up all the food for the winter. Like, you couldn't go down to the local Lidl and buy stuff back then. You had to have the food there. And because the restricted temperatures and the darkness, the foraging and all just totally decreased. As they say, the arse fell out of everything, so you had to have your food stashed. So Iha Hauna, and then people were going into hibernation a little bit, and that's something in the human brain that we still need, but we don't get it, because what's happening is when we go into that hibernation in the brain, and it's still there. Christmas comes, and yeah. Jesus, Mary and Joseph, it's all over the place, and it's got worse. Like
it's got worse. I seen my
first Christmas advert last night on the 19th of October.
Not even Halloween.
It's ridiculous. Like, yeah. And it's somebody has to sort of say, enough is enough. So we don't get that breather from all the hullabaloo and it's in on top of Christmas, and people like mental health stuff. It all emanates from that. They need to get back into the cycles of the nature cycles. A little bit calmer after this. Calm it down after Halloween. Try and ignore the Christmas stuff until the appropriate time. So, Iha Hounie, you were asking me. I think there is a festival. I'm pretty sure there's a festival on the weekend of Halloween. Halloween Eve is the Monday. And the Sunday is the 30th. Went to Spain, met a taxi driver who brought me to my local destination. He told me his daughter was bringing him to Dublin on the 30th of October for the Iha Hounie Festival. So obviously,
there is a festival.
There is one somewhere, and
find that out.
I'm thinking it's up around Parnell Square in the Garden of Remembrance, and like now it's. They're throwing up all that sort of stuff around to get things going, get a bit of a buzz going.
It's more supervised now, and it's great that Dublin City Council have a lot of supervised bonfires and that, because remember years ago we'd be collecting wood and how dangerous, but there is a lot of supervised fireworks. And I know Dervla, who I do a lot of interviews with, she lives there in Rockfield, and Rockfield had a bad name for a long time, and
Rockfield's up in Whitethorn.
Yeah, I know.
That's where my son lives up there. Yeah, my son lives beside it.
She's moved into that area, and she's doing great work.
Okay.
So she has a lot going on for Halloween for all age groups, and she gets the local schools involved and local community involved, and give them something. You know, when you work on something, you appreciate it better.
Yeah.
So the kids from the school in transition year usually, and they will work on something, and then on Halloween, it's great. They have the fireworks and all. So
a bit of fun.
More like residents getting together again.
Yeah, true enough.
We used to have years ago.
Yeah.
So other than that.
So what are you dressing up on Halloween? Are you already dressed up? You're looking a little bit dressed up this morning now.
I'm looking a little bit chesty again.
Oh,
sick
God.
Of this every day. Yeah. I won't even go down that road.
No, please, I won't go down that road.
I'm not sure yet, but I will go around with the grandkids. You will as well, probably, will you?
Yeah, I sort of try to leave that to the parents, and then I'll jump in and out maybe the day after it, or the day before it. But I will be... messing with them around about their outfits and all that sort of stuff, and giving them an apple.
So tell us a little bit.
What am I supposed to do with that, Grandad?
But remember all the old ones with the coin in the bucket? You can't really do that now, could you really?
No. I don't know how we did it. For long, much more while my teeth are broke.
Kids are probably choked.
Oh, no, you'd be passing out in the basin. Smothered.
Do you want to go down again?
Get that apple up there. It's down about 4 feet down in the bucket.
Maybe that's it. So tell us a little bit about Santry, because we know you're a big intro. Now, Santry Community Gardens, are you still doing the walks?
Yes, I am. I'm actually doing one on the Tuesday after Halloween. Is it after Halloween? It's the 7th or 8th of November. DCC have contacted me. I do an annual one. I did the Active Age one. I think I could have missed that because I was in Spain. And the Active Age one, I bring people who use the park as a recreation just to fill in the blanks. Like... Wherever you go on this planet, you're always following in the footsteps of someone else. Like someone else has been there before, and some of them are interesting, some are not. And I'm up in Holt Castle at the minute. The St. Lawrence family have been up there for 800 years. And one of the St. Lawrence women, the fourth daughter of the Earl of Holt, moved into Santry in 1861. Lady Margaret St. Lawrence. She moved in and married Compton Domble, and she became the Lady of the Manor. So there's a connection now between Holt and Santry that wasn't there before. And interestingly enough, I can see your eyes blinking. The Baron and the Baroness, I'm calling them Baron and Baroness, they are the landed gentry still associated with Holt Castle. Christopher Gaisford St. Lawrence.
Can you just tell me before you go any further, Holt Castle, that's not where the deer park is it?
It is, yeah.
Is that Holt Castle?
That's Holt Castle, yeah.
So
that
is
big
the
castle
deer
you park on the
Hotel
way up
gone? Or is that still there?
The Deer Park Hotel is still there. It's up behind the golf course.
Is it still opened? Like,
I think there are Ukrainian people up there for the moment. I've seen them out.
That's a lovely drive in, isn't it?
It's gorgeous. It's gorgeous. Fantastic. Yeah. And like, people sort of, I don't understand. People must have blinkers on. They pass by a big castle.
Because you can't see the castle from the main road.
No, but when you're on the way up to the Deer Park.
But how often would you be going up to the Deer Park? Because I didn't think it was opened anymore.
Well, that's true.
Probably it's not, so you wouldn't really be.
That's
going
true.
Up
it is off the beaten track, but it is a private residence. Like
is
not,
it?
Yes, it is. The Baron and the Baroness still live there. They still live in the wing.
In the wing of the hotel.
In the wing of the castle.
Maybe I'm stupid here. The Deer Park Hotel, is that a different thing? There's a castle also.
There's a castle halfway down the road.
Oh,
when you go up the lane way on your right hand side,
a few times
you must be blind.
I was going to get married in the Deer Park Hotel.
Right.
And we went up twice or three times. I never noticed a castle.
Oh, for God's sake. You're probably too busy looking into his eyes. You're in love. You're getting married. Yeah, there's a beautiful castle there. And lock, stock and barrel, it was sold during the summer. And Christopher, the last St. Lawrence to stay there, his son Julian founded the cookery school there in 2008, and that's very popular with people. There's a cookery school in the old castle, in the old kitchens, in the old 18th century kitchens. They train chefs, they entertain families, they do corporate now after lockdown. So I go in and I do the after dinner speech. Once they've cooked their meal and they're eating it, it's served up in the butler's room.
Lovely.
And we still have the empty seat assigned for Grace O'Malley. That's there from the 1600s. Big kerfuffle about that when she wasn't helped in the castle by the Lord. She kidnapped the son and said, I was knocking on your door and I was shipwrecked. And you didn't bring me in and give me succour and give me food and water like any normal person would do. And then she waited down in the dock, Grace O'Malley, the pirate queen, had been over with Queen Elizabeth, and she captured the Lord's son, brought him away, and sent a message to the Lord: if you promise me to set a seat for the stranger every day, I will give you your son back. And he did, and it still goes on today.
And she gives them back. And you go up there to give talks. Is it open to the public?
No, not for tourists. A private party goes in and books 15 people in for a meal to learn to cook, happy birthday, grandparents, all of that. It'll be busy at Christmas. I go into the butler's room and I wait for them to come in with their meal. I go in and I talk about the history. I sing a few songs as well.
That's good.
Because our history is in our songs and it's very entertaining. But the castle, getting back to that, the St. Lawrence family are there still, and Christopher is 93 and his wife, Meryl, she is 89.
And they're both still there?
They're both still there. And Christopher was imparting me lots of information about Margaret, his great granny's sister, who came to Santry in 1861, giving me information about her that I never knew.
Brilliant.
I never knew. And,
so you're picking up more information.
I'm getting a little bit more information. And the lady who's 89, she's a Guinness. She's a direct descendant of Arthur Guinness. She's directly in line. She comes through Richard. There's four strands of the Guinness family. She comes through the religious one. So there you go.
So they had a lot of Dublin. I mean, I'm still trying to find out what's going to happen to the house in Beaumont Woods, the Guinness house.
That's gorgeous.
It was. That's
where Arthur Guinness lived.
Yeah.
It's the house he lived in, and he named Beaumont. He named it. Grace Park Drive, that's after his daughter, Grace.
Is it Grace? The nursing home has been sold as well, so it's all kind of boarded up now. Someone broke the windows in the lovely
house. It's been used as a storage facility, that's what I... And then there was a religious section built beside it, the nuns.
There's a little church, but I'm hoping that house is so... Have you ever seen it? The staircase
I've been
and all,
in it,
it's absolutely beautiful. It'd be great to see that restored and opened probably as
a tourist attraction.
Exactly, yeah. We don't have loads of them left, really.
I don't understand why Guinness are not involved and stepping in. That's Arthur Guinness's home. And, like, it's sticking out a mile.
The nuns took over, so I don't know.
Yeah, but that's done and dusted. Mm. Reinvented all again.
Anyway, we'll continue on talking about that.
Interesting. Okay, we're talking about Santry, the connection with St. Lawrence. And I will be doing a walk in the first week in November. Any time you go up there, if you see me walking around... everybody knows because I'm doing the tours there for the last 15 years. And I impart little nuggets of information about this is where Lady Margaret lost her necklace. We found it. We have it. Her little, really? Yeah, we have a little scent thing from 1857. And we have, this is where Lady Helena's walk is. Now, there was a murder on it. One of the chambermaids was murdered up along the gardens. They say that's haunted. So there's a little corner there where we talk about that, up at the community gardens. And just to mention the community gardens, brilliant facility up there. If you go into the park and walk, keep walking, there's a old walled garden in the distance, and inside there is the community wall, the community
it's
garden.
It's the little doorway, isn't it? Behind it, the wall, the doorway looks lovely.
And the Fingal County Council have jurisdiction over it, and they've grown all the original apple tree breeds, and the pond has been reinstated. And up on the top section where they generate the food, you can go in, and for €20 a year you can become a member there. And there's lots of people up there doing stuff on a daily basis.
Did you have allotments or anything?
Not allotments, no. No, there is a section up in the garden at the top section where they do all the prepping and the digging and the growing. And it's a community effort. The allotments seem to bring in a little bit of competition. People's stuff is growing over the other one. Get that tree over there. It's growing into my allotment. That type of thing. I've heard that through the grapevine.
And I thought that would be great now for a bit of, you know, therapeutic for older people.
Of course it does. And that's exactly the way it is up there. So when you go up there with a tour, if I'm walking through, I don't doorstep anyone. I let people, they're doing their thing. And there's a beekeeper up there now.
Very interesting.
And there's a lady up there called Marion Morphy. She's one of the Hanleys. Jesus, she talked the two hind legs off a donkey. I thought I was bad.
I was just going to say, like yourself. But look, it's great that it's on our doorsteps. And probably a lot of people haven't even known, because with the hotel's been built and the apartments and houses are up there now as well, and Lidl and shops and everything. It's kind of lost.
Well, we saved 100 acres of it. There is 100 acres of it there. And there's nothing been done with that. That's open. That's parkland. And it's all there. It's all done.
I think it's lovely when you come in and
you have done and dusted,
can't think of the word? Brain fog.
The big house. River.
Not the big house. You have the hotels on this side.
Okay, start me. Three words. The big house, it was there. No. Sanctuary Court was
there.
Is
there a big house still there?
Well, that raised area with the trees around it, that's where Sanctuary Court stood. The house stood there from 1700 to 1941.
Yeah, but that's gone now.
It was born to 1941.
The little bridge over, that's lovely little walk.
That's the 7-acre bridge.
That's gorgeous.
I do a bit of a talk
and
there.
They have the swans and all. It is lovely.
And the river is underneath the Sanctuary River. Yeah.
Tinker River. Anyways, it is lovely, and I used to go up there well before all the apartments and the hotels. I used to bring my dog up there for a walk because you'd get lost and it was great.
Yeah, but you know, it became a little bit of a no-go area because of that. Like, I remember going up there in the early noughties when it was being converted. People were coming in with burnt cars and bashing them into the trees and the river. So it's great. It's all under control now. It's great.
This is Near FM
90.3. And you're very welcome back to Lifeline. I'm delighted to say we have Roddy in the studio, and you're very welcome, Roddy. About time as well, like we've been trying to get you.
Give it over now, come on. You didn't say me cousin Roddy.
Me cousin Roddy.
Yeah, you're right.
I know, you're so good for coming in. Both been kind of going back and forward. I've been busy over with burying people, and you've been busy
looking after Caroline.
Yeah, your wife had a bad accident, I know that. But thanks for coming in this morning. Now, we're going to talk a little bit. I'm going to start off and then I'm going to hand it over to Jerry, because Jerry is a yapper like yourself, so you'll know more about football.
I'm a published author as well, so that I just want to.
I wouldn't call myself an author. I lived the life Jerry and Paul held.
No, you did.
Done it, you know.
Fantastic.
I told them stories. That's
so why write the book now?
I'd never had any intentions, Debbie, to ever write a book. I've been asked maybe 5 or 6 times over the last 15 years, and I thought, I wouldn't be bothered, you know. But I actually sat with Caroline one day, and she said, "Rod, there's only one man could write your stories, as I call it, and that's Paul Howard." Because I know Paul 30 years, right? And then it just came out of the blue one Monday. Paul rang me. He said, "Rod, I'm having a strange day." He said, "An agent rang me on your behalf," which I don't have an agent, he's my football agent. And he said, "The CEO of Penguin Michael right. McLaughlin called him the same day, heard me on a podcast, and I flippantly threw out a remark, shrill, be in me book. Right. Never any attention, and it just snowballed. So Paul rang me, he said, can I introduce you to Penguin, they're my publishers. I says, yeah, they want you to do a book. I says, yeah, but don't introduce me unless you're going to do it.
Very good.
And it took him about 10 minutes, and he went, Rod, jeez, I don't do autobiographies. He says, no, we'll do it. And that's how it was.
And that's how it was.
That was so brilliant. Did it great crack.
Does this start kind of through COVID, or was did it all come before COVID?
No, this was only less than a year ago.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah, it's a year. No, sorry. It was a little bit longer. About September last year, it happened.
Very good.
Yeah, and then we sat down every Friday for about 10 months.
Yeah, I heard you about the tea and scones.
Oh no, coffee, Jerry. Coffee.
Sorry.
I'm a tea head, but
coffee and cabaret, I don't believe it.
Yeah, no, coffee.
As you said, we know you well. People who are listening today might not know you grew up in Cabra. Your passion was football, and I suppose all sport. Like as I said, you're my cousin, so my dad was a big sportsman, loved boxing, and as your brother was a boxer as well. And my dad, one thing that always says, and I fought one of the Cray twins. Remember that, Reddy?
He battered Reggie Cray. Yeah. He did, and it's in there, Debbie.
Very good.
It's in there, and I tell you where he boxed him. The Manor Town Bats in London.
Way.
That's where he boxed Reggie, and. Reggie Cray, I seen a poster when I was in London. One of his relations, a friend of mine, showed me a poster of Reggie fighting on another show. Unfortunately, Terry wasn't on it, my uncle Terry had that. But Reggie, that was Reggie's port of call for boxing. And Terry knocked lumps out.
Way, and they're tough nuts. And looking at the film there, the legend, and I said, oh my God, they are tough.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a legend, Debbie, because you talk about sport and that, right? Your dad never missed one of my football matches. He was at all them. Mm. Wow. Used to bring me to games when I was a kid as well. He was a football, but mostly boxing. But your dad was legendary for boxing. I seen your dad boxing live in the Cabra Grand at the back of it. There used to be a carnival.
Right.
And on the carnival, he'd have boxing on it. Right. And I remember my Uncle Terry there. I'll never forget. I was only a nipper looking at him. And we idolised him. Love brilliant. Him. Brilliant, yeah. Man.
Great role model for you.
He was an absolute. I loved him.
Yeah, very good. Very
so,
good.
Who were the most important people in your life? Your dad, you know, died very young. And I remember my dad getting that phone call, and I'll never forget it. And I don't think my dad ever really coped with that or got over losing your dad. But your role models, your mum and dad, obviously, and your dad was a boxer as well.
My dad was the man, yeah. He was the main man. I idolised him. Yeah. My ma is brilliant. She's still up there laying the law down and full of mischief, but she's brilliant. She's a legend.
She's an O'Rourke, isn't she?
Yeah.
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 And he's the that's the boxing gene in the family, isn't the O'Rourke? Because he was a Golden Gloves man, the O'Rourke, was he?
My Uncle Jack, heavyweight champion.
Yeah.
Irish heavyweight champion, represented the country over 25 times.
Yeah, I knew that. I knew it wasn't the Collins, it was an O'Rourke gene in there, you know?
Yeah.
Seemingly, David Cooley, my brother, was telling me that there may be a relation there, the O'Rourkes and the Cooleys, maybe
there wasn't rumours back in the day. I don't know, hang him out the dry on radio, but. He did masquerade as Stephen a few nights, but look, we all did, Jerry. I done it too.
He did it in New York at the Ireland Italy game. He was VIP'd all around New York as Stephen Collins after the Italian game.
I probably got the rap for that one as well. I remember going to a nightclub in London, myself and John Swift and Laura, his wife, and Caroline. Yeah. And I went and I said to the taxi driver, tell him the champ is out in the car, and I gave him 20 quid.
Wow.
Bouncers come down. Come on, Steve, I was up. Had not Naomi Campbell sitting on my knee. Carolyn was dancing with Tony Hadley out of Spandau Ballet.
Wow.
And then a fella tapped me on the shoulder. Yeah. And he goes, Steve, your mate is coming to have a beer with you. A fella called Gary Stretch, who was another professional boxer. I said, the game is up, lads. We had the scarper out there. You know? But between me and your brother,
David.
We've done a good number on Steve anyway.
He had a sidekick called Yaman who's just on the phone there ringing.
Yaman's the man.
He can't wait to get your book. He's going to the launch up in Hannah's Corner.
Now
be careful, make sure you get the cash off him, because you know what it is, he has his communion money.
No, Yaman looked after me when I was on the floor.
Did you?
He sent me up three lovely shorts. He did. He sent me three lovely shorts on through my brother-in-law, Mike.
Ah, very good.
He said, give them the rod. I know she's not dressing well. So, Yaman, thanks for the shorts if you're listening.
You wouldn't want to be sensitive, would you? You wouldn't want to be sensitive.
Not in Cabra.
No.
not I'd have not been a Cullen too much. Yeah.
No.
Anyway, he's going to give you the Begsborough, lend it the Begsborough medal that he won. It's a, that's a cabaret football.
Now, I could dispute that one. I think Yaman was a sub for most of that year.
Well,
I
there think, you go.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's tank, well, thanks
the myth. The myth in cabaret was the Lip Roach won a gold medal in the Olympics.
The Lip right? Roach.
The Lip Roach, right? And Yaman won an FBI Junior Cup medal, I think it was. Right. Now, there's dispute about both of them. Because the Lip never was in the Olympics. And we don't know about Yaman. We have to see if it's an authentic medal.
He
could have got it out on the
mentioned boys. Somebody called Twinkle.
Twinkle was going around as well, masquerading as an FBI Cup winner, winner's medal, FBI Junior Cup winner's medal. Right, and I think him and Yaman got the medals in the same pawn shop. That's what I believe. Anyway.
Got in the lucky bag.
That's it.
A lucky
that's
bag.
It. A lucky no, Yaman was a good player.
Oh, yeah, he was.
A cranky bastard.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, he was terrible cranky.
Yeah, yeah, and his hair, he was always fixing his hair.
Yeah, well, he couldn't head the ball.
Yeah, true. He's too small.
Toss me, and I remember one time he headed a ball, and the first thing he shouted at the touchline, "Have you got shampoo for me afterwards?"
No, gel.
Oh, gel. That's what it was. Yaman loved himself.
But sorry, Debbie. Going back, sorry, no, Debbie. It's okay. Going sorry, back Debbie, to the sorry, book, Debbie, sorry, yeah. Starting off, you must have gone back in time because you weren't always. You, I remember you did plastering for me years ago in my house.
I did. Is it still on the wall, Debbie? Is it?
I saw him not in that house anymore, so I hope it is. But how did it all start? Like, your early years, I know as you grew up in the house with your mum, your dad, and our nanny Collins as well.
Yeah.
But was football on your mind from when you were.
No, do you know what, Debbie? Your dad, my dad, Jack and the whole lot, Christy Collins, my cousins, all boxing. And as you know, my dad built the gym on the back of the house. Yeah, we had a boxing gym on the back of the house. So it was predominantly boxing. But I remember the turning point, and I've said this probably 20 times in the last week or two, watching George Best on the telly when I was 8. And it was something exotic about him, the hair, the way he ran. Everything was just brilliant. And I thought to myself, that lodged in my brain. So then obviously we all played football on the street when we weren't boxing. But I had more of a love for the boxing or for the football. And then as I got older, I was more interested in football. And then I got a bit of a name myself playing locally with Animo in the Olympics. And then Villy and I up in the bogeys. So I started to make a little name myself as a footballer. And then that progressed. But I always boxed in the meantime. And then I got offered trials in England. So, and funny enough, first trial I went to there was George Best in the dressing room.
No way.
So that was it. Yeah, George was playing for Fulham. So I went to Brendan McCarthy down in Arbor Hill where we boxed, and I told him what was going on. He said to me, "What do you love the most?"
Right.
I said, "I love the football." He said, "Well, you have to love the boxing to stick with." And I went to England. That was it. So the boxing just became secondary then. I always went back to it, and I boxed a couple of times under a false name in England. Mick McDwyer was my boxing name in England. McDwyer.
Originally. Killer McDwyer.
Mick McDwyer. So, but the football was my thing. I loved the crowd and the, you know, the team involved, the dressing room, the crack and all that. So that's where it took off for me.
And were you a professional boxer when you were doing the plastering at that time?
Professional footballer I was, yeah. I was a professional footballer, and on your contract, you couldn't participate in anything else. Couldn't have a part-time job, couldn't take part in any sport. Yeah. So therefore, I worked on a building site in England during the break, because you get a good break on the football. And I went in, I worked for a Pakistan, an Indian builder, and he said to me, watching him, I said, Mick Dwyer. And he said to me, "Mick McDwyer." And that's how I became Mick McDwyer. And I still had my pay slip at home with Mick McDwyer on it. And when I boxed a fella called, what was his name? A Welsh fella. He went on to be a professional champion. And when I boxed him as Mick McDwyer. So that's, you earn a few bob extra.
Yeah.
So I did plaster while I was there.
That could be the follow up book, Roddy.
Oh, stop.
McDwyer is back.
Oh, no, stop.
Yeah.
No, seriously.
Yeah.
I've done that.
Yeah.
I've done the audio book. I only done it across the road.
Lovely.
16 studios across in Kilmore Road. And never, ever, ever, ever again.
Well,
would
you,
I do it.
Well, Roddy, I'm going to tell you, you're a grandfather now, aren't you?
Yeah.
Well, you know, and like, that's a legacy for them.
Yeah.
When you see your grandchildren reading that in years to come,
yeah,
you're going to say, "Wow, I'm so happy I did that." No, seriously. Well,
no, Jerry, I do feel that already.
Yeah, good.
Because my worry was, what will Caroline think of it?
Yeah.
And what my kids and my grandkids think of it.
Yeah.
And they all got it when I was in Spain, because it was sent, publisher sent to the house.
Right.
Every one of them read it.
Yeah.
And my ma has said, "Brilliant, we're happy."
Stuff.
That's all I was worried about.
Yeah.
After that,
yeah,
I got slagged the other day somewhere, which is going to happen. Doesn't bother me. Yeah. I've been slagging football grounds on me, if you know what I mean. So
God help the fellas. If I was slagging you, I'd be doing it from a distance.
Too over that now. I've two big sons, though. One's a heavyweight champion, Patrick. Yeah, he won the Gold Cup in the Celtic Cup down in Waterford. Dungarvan, he's a heavyweight. He's good, yeah.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
Good stuff. But the grandchildren sitting in the back of the car and you're looking at that and they're buried in behind it, you'll be sticking out the chest saying, I'm so glad I did that.
Please God, I live long enough.
And was it hard going back? Was it? Because I remember asking you, what is it all about? You go back and you said you went back to the age you were about four. So all their memories from when you were four up to now, was it hard reliving them?
It was hard, Debbie, the parts about. I'll tell you what, the very first day of the book, we went down to Cabra and we sat on the wall in 12 Animal Terrace. And I cried for most of the day.
Really? 12 Animal Terrace was always the meeting point for everyone because, you know, we've cousins in Scotland, we've cousins in Birmingham, and then we've a big family here as well. And my dad was always over, as you know, 12 Animal. Going over to 12 Animal, and my mum's mum and dad died very young. I remember my nanny Collins just vaguely because she died when I was quite young. I remember me and your sister Colette, and we were going up to see her. It's the first time I ever seen anyone in a coffin, but she was always a real gentle woman, always had the Easter eggs and the sweets at Christmas and our puddings and all.
She was brilliant. She was brilliant. We lived with me nanny. It was me nanny's house. I mean, we moved in, and my ma got a house in Arbor Hill, right, and she refused it. She said, no, I want to stay. She looked after me, and my ma was brilliant. But my nanny was brilliant. I used to sleep in the bed beside her. I was a pet. And I used to bring her down to Silk Mills on Dorset Street, which she'd be getting a frock and a hat with a big pin in it.
Yeah.
Bring her on the bus down. But she was brilliant. And because it was my nanny's house, Dad used to rap on the window with his key. Yeah. Right? And he'd say, Mother. They always called her Mother.
Yeah, very good.
They had great respect.
Yeah, it is. It is. Like you're like going back to the very start,
I know.
And all the memories do flood in, but then you move on, and then the good stuff comes, and the challenges,
and you know what, Roddy? Yeah. You know, we've like we're all in the 50s now. Well, you are probably a bit older, but
Roddy, now hold on,
well older.
But you know, you think back into the memories, and even now, like some of the times we meet at funerals, and most it's nice to meet at weddings, and when there's an occasion, and to meet all the cousins that you haven't met like for years, and then you talk about the memories, like we've had hard times with my dad going through what he did and the way he died, and then you know, then you make the memories of you writing the book.
This is great.
This is a sort of
a pulling together of the Roddy Collins story and the Collins family and all that, and even the fact that you are now talking here live on air because of this. That's
but you know what I love with social media. I don't do it, we don't know how to do it, but Debbie, Niamh, Birmingham, Glasgow, they're all together.
No,
they all know what's happening.
It's brilliant.
And I'm in contact with my cousin Christy.
You set up that WhatsApp.
No, I set that one up for the remember the lockdown, was that called?
Yeah, 12 Animal. We're still going, and I don't think you're on it.
No, I jumped off. I was on two group WhatsApps in my life. I had to jump
WhatsApp off. Group before for funerals, coffins, death. That's the first 5 seconds of the interview.
No, but you know what happens? You sit down on Saturday night, you have a few beers.
ding, 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 ding,
and then you get into it. But look, I'm delighted that the younger gang, because my nave, she's the ambassador for our family. She knows everything.
Lovely.
And everything knows what happened to us. And what I'm delighted about is, this in particular, is for Hanlon's Corner, because it's referencing the book. It was your dad's local, even though he came from Corrib Road over to it. He came from Grace Park over to it. They all met down a Sunday. Me dad and all his brothers and then all the nephews there, and I grew up as a young man. And I'm having it in Hanlon's Corner for that particular reason. And our Birmingham crew have all booked in. There's 12 coming out in Birmingham.
I'll bring me a guitar, Roddy, and I'll sing a song. I'll bring you the guitar up. We'll sing a song together.
Yeah.
Roddy and Jerry hit the road.
Jerry and the Pace, mate.
Remember you were doing the Rod Squad and all that. I presume that's in the book, is it?
There's Rod Squad bits in it, yeah, but that was 20 years ago, 18 years ago. That was just something that came out. When I went to England, I never thought I was coming home.
Go away.
I was going straight to the top.
Yeah.
That was me. My record of management was second to none.
Right.
And I was going straight to Manchester United in my own mind. And then maybe Real Madrid or Barcelona. But that's so when this production company contacted me, of course I say yeah to everything.
Yeah, go for it.
And it came out. And just before I finished, I got the bullet in England, and I come back, and I was ripped asunder.
Away,
I went straight onto a bench because I had no money. I got a shilling, and I got no settlement off them over there. So I come back Christmas. I was paying 2 grand mortgage in England. I had kids look after here. Oh, it was a disaster. We were on the floor. I went back on the building side and I was tortured.
Go away.
Ah, Jerry. Yeah, and I can take the stick and give it out.
Absolutely, yeah.
But this got a bit to the bone.
Yeah.
I remember walking off the site and thinking.
Especially at Dub, you know.
Yeah, I was thinking to myself, Jesus, the realism of it is, my dream is gone, it's over, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was it.
Yeah.
But it was great. It was great, though. It got me a bit of work out of RT in another place and it was good out cracking as well. I've never looked at it.
Yeah.
Never once looked at it.
My son, like I live in Santry, right?
Yeah.
And the Santry Ciro thing.
Yeah.
My son, Sean, he's in London, he's listening in. He's a Bowers fan, but he sent me the snip of yous beating Rovers 6-4 after them hammered yous 4-1 all through the game. And you're running around. Great stuff, you're hugging. The players are just so happy to be with you and you as their manager. And it's not acted, it's just brilliant to look at.
Well, you see,
the Santry Ciro.
In the Santry Ciro. I had a very fractious relationship with the board in Bohemians. They were trying to sack me any chance they got.
Boy.
Oh, yeah. And this particular day, if we hadn't have won that game, we'd have been too far off to win the title. 4-1 down, I'm walking up to the half-time break,
yeah.
And one of my allies grabbed me and says, Roger, getting sacked when the game is over.
Go away.
Yeah, so I went in, and people think about tactics, and they talk about how do you turn it round.
Yeah, moving.
I went into the cubicle, and this God may take me, and I said, "Dad, come on."
Ah, oh, wow. Wow.
Very anyway, good. We went down.
You did.
Went down and we turned it around, a few tactical switches, and we battered them. And the players didn't know at the final whistle the consequence of what they'd done.
Very
they
good.
Saved me bacon.
Wow.
And I couldn't thank them enough, but I never told them till the season was over.
Yeah.
But you know, it was brilliant. It was brilliant. And to say that they loved me, I loved them.
I know, and it shows.
Yeah.
It shows.
Like, I wasn't just a manager, Jerry.
No,
I was their dad.
Yeah.
I was their mentor.
Yeah.
I was their counsellor.
Yeah.
I'd lend them a few bob, I'd get them alone in my car. Do anything for them.
Yeah,
and they done anything for me.
That's showed in the game.
That's how we won, you
showed
know.
Showed in the game.
Yeah. That must have been probably one of the best, probably, eras of your life, because you grew up in Canberra.
2001, that was.
That must have been your local, where you went down as a child to Dalymount to the football
matches. It should have been, Debbie, but it wasn't.
No.
Mm. No, because the reason being that I was on a cliff edge every single game.
Right.
You couldn't enjoy it.
No.
The pressure was horrendous.
See, you don't know in the background what's going on.
Yeah,
you know?
It's all in the book anyway. Yeah. The pressure was horrendous. And known, and I probably won that with the lads through a vengeance.
Yeah.
And the lads knew things weren't right. So we created our own little environment within the club. It was our own little club. We were never subsidised for functions or anything like that. I had a plastering company. I was well heeled at the time. So any deals or hotels or anything,
yeah.
I paid for it.
Good stuff.
Brought the lads away together. And so we sort of grouped together and they worked for me and I worked for them. But when it was over, and I remember the week that we won the league.
Yeah, we did the double, did you?
We done the double,
yeah, yeah.
But we had a week preparation for the cup. We won the league. We all went on the lash to the Belfry pub in Stoney Batter. And I got a phone call. I made a quote after the game, live on RTE. And I got a call. I was in the pub, good few points on me. How are you? Yeah. We're going to have to sue you. You've libeled a whole lot of us. Not libeled us, what was the word? Anyway, some legal term. And I went, you know what? What I said, I stand by. Sue me if you want. I've nothing anyway.
Hey.
And that was my preparation for the final. When we won the double, it was relief.
Go away.
It should have been ecstasy and joy. No, it was relief. It was like, it was hard to explain.
Yeah.
And I didn't celebrate. I went to Moyos pub with me two great friends, Stevie Spicer and Mick Haney, Caroline's brother. I remember standing there and Caroline looked at me and she tells me this and it's written there. She said, I looked at you and I was the happiest I've seen you since you were a kid of 16.
Wow.
And I should have been that. But look, it was what it was. I got sacked when I was out in Florida. Look, I deserve to be sacked for what I'd done afterwards.
Yeah.
I probably instigated my own sacking.
Yeah.
But when the dust settled, I was out in Florida relaxing. I started thinking then, Debbie, about the good days during that year.
Yeah.
The happiness, the love I have of the players. They love to help my men at all. maybe I can overcome this obstacle with the board. Sit down, I got a phone call. You're sacked. That was the end of
it. The Americans had been taken out of the car park again.
That was it, you know?
I don't know where I heard you saying that, but I don't know where we were in company. I don't know where it was, but I heard you saying that. I knew I was sacked when we went back to the car park and America had been taken.
Me and Club Cars could write a book on their own, you know. Now, I'll tell you what happened there, right? I got the sack, right? Yeah. And I still had on. Now, the bars when there was no car. But the one in Carlisle when I got the sack, I held on to the Merc because it was part of my contract. And I was in the house one day and I seen a truck outside, which had happened many times. And I went quick and I put my two youngest kids in the back seat. You don't move, right? Because I was told you cannot repossess the car if there's someone in it. So I think it was Niamh and Park were sitting in the back of the car. They got their dinner in the back of the car. They got their tea in the back of the car till your man gave up, took his tow truck away. But that, come here, yeah. I have a big poster at home. Right. When I got the second Carlisle, right. I was given a brand new car, yeah. Right, for getting a buyer for the club, finder's fee. Your man reneged on the deal. I was in Dublin with the car and a big poster I have at home. Arrest warrant for Roddy Collins on car theft. Hammer at home. It was on every billboard in Cumbria. Fella rang me up. Had to drive the car over, submit myself to the police station, hand the car back. But I have that poster, you know. But look, it's funny now, but at the time it wasn't funny.
You could say your life has been boring. You've had a very interesting life. And you mentioned a lot in the book, Caroline. Caroline's the love of your life and you met her very young. Tell us a little bit about that. How you met Caroline.
I met Caroline when I was 15.
Wow.
And I was in the Tearaway gang. I used to call them the Hole in the Wall gang, or the White Boys we were called. I was in the Tearaway gang back then, and we were borderline, like, we went to do a few things that we shouldn't have done. You read about that one.
As you do.
As you do. Yeah, we went on one sortie down to a place on Blessing Road, and one of the boys went in. I was the man watching the door, and the fella driving the getaway car bottled it in Scarpa, right? So I ran, fella in the shop ran, and I remember hiding under a park bench, and all I could hear was, I thought the whole police force in Dublin was out looking for me. It wasn't, it was the ambulance going in and out of Mata Hospital. I was lying under the bench for about 3 hours, panicking, thinking I was going to be put away for life, you know. But anyway, I walked up, we were on the messing around town. And I don't know how this happened, but I walked up Henry Street, turned left, and I seen a girl at a bus stop in a uniform.
Right.
And I'll never forget, one of her stockings was up to her knee, the other one was too short, it reached half up her leg. And I wasn't looking at her leg, we're only kids. And she looked at me, looked at her, and it was like as if I knew her on me. I thought, Jesus, she's brilliant. Yeah. And then she tells me, I protected her on the bus. Next time I seen her then, was walking down Manor Street, I was working as a barman part time. And then the next time, a mate of mine said, I'm going with a girl over at Devney Garden, she has a mate and she's not going around. I said, yeah, I'll go out with her. Pardon me. So I was waiting at the tap pub that I used to run at the time, and he turned the corner with the two girls, and he was only Caroline.
Was it?
Yeah, she was about a year and a half older then, and she you know, she was a woman, young woman. And I said, oh jeez, she's gorgeous. And I left the home that night, and I left the home 6 weeks in a row, right?
Yeah.
And every week I looked in the mirror, here's what I'm going to say, I'll answer that.
Yeah.
And I bottled it every week. And on the sixth week, it was Valentine's weekend, and I said, right, this is it, I'm going for here. And I said to her, you're great, and I think you're gorgeous, and we're always talking, blah, blah, blah. I said, will you go on a date with me? She says, yeah, of course I will. I said, give us a kiss for Valentine's Day. She says, no. I don't know you well enough. And my first date was to the pictures, and I buried Nullick's coat.
Yeah.
He'd a few quid and all the cat. He had a long leather coat down to his ankles, worth a couple of hundred quid, a lot of money back then. And I borrowed his coat. I remember arriving about Devney, Karen, six sisters on the balcony were waiting for me. Well, obviously five of them. And Sandra looked down and she went, Ma, that's Roddy Collins out of Canberra, get rid of him. He's around years. I was dancing in town when I was 14. And he's wearing another guy Connor's leather coat as well. And I went to the pitch and I sat in the coat, was afraid to take it off because in case it was robbed in the Plaza Picture House. And I'd my arm out, can't try to be cool, and that went numb after 10 minutes. The sweat was paid down me. I was afraid to look at the film. I looked at the back of the fella's head. The Armin was the creepy film.
The Armin. Oh, Jesus. Damien is in that one. Wow.
Yeah. So that was my first date, and hell came and dealt me a second time. Then I brought to a pool hall, and all the bugs of my own gang was there. All the gang was in there, and I don't know how she went out again, but thankfully she did, and that was it. We just inseparable ever since. Yeah, 47 years.
Okay, James, wow. Roddy, are you in a hurry to go? Can you stay a little bit longer?
Of course.
We're just going off some promos back in a minute.
Yeah. Download a podcast and catch up on your listening at near.ie.
Near FM.
And you're very welcome back to Lifeline. Just before going any further, big hello and good morning to Ursula. Thanks for texting in, Ursula. Hope you're keeping well. And delighted to say Roddy's still here in the studio talking about the book, The Rod Father. And he's given us loads of time today. It's brilliant, Roddy. Special VIP
family,
for your cousin.
Family.
Dad never forgive me.
Family.
So listen, we mentioned that we have relations in Birmingham, we have relations in Scotland, and you probably would have been a lot more closer. As you said, you lived in your nanny's house.
Yeah.
You saw a group, so all the relations that were coming over would have came to 12 Animal Terrace.
Oh, Debbie, it was brilliant. And I gave it in for the book, but obviously they had to couldn't put everything in.
Right.
But the highlight of our summer was when my auntie Betty had come over and my uncle James passed. I was a bit younger then. My auntie Betty had come over, Betty Kelly. She was originally from Animal Drive, and Marie and Michael, her brother, would come. And it was a brilliant, brilliant time. Mm. We'd sit around. They loved a pot of tea, and Marie and my auntie, and Michael was very quiet, very reserved, a little bit older than me, but it was brilliant times. You know, the stories they'd have, how they loved Animal, how they loved me nanny. Me nanny loved them because they were grandchildren.
Right.
Me nanny used to send pudding. She'd make a pudding, right? I used to help her, the raisins, the currants, all the stuff, put the whiskey, the stout in it, the drop of sherry, put it in a cloth, hang it, and send it at Christmas with a bacon. And then Easter, she sent the Easter eggs to Birmingham and to Dixie in Scotland, yeah. And then Dixie used to come home every year, different times, obviously. Now, we had a two-bedroom house,
right,
Charlie,
yeah,
totally in Cabra. Yeah. There was nine of us already.
Yeah.
So you can imagine when my auntie Betty had come over and when Dixie had come over, I mean, we'd be squashed, yeah. But it was brilliant. I don't ever remember being uncomfortable.
Yeah.
It was a great, like, it was like a holiday for us.
Yeah,
we
yeah.
loved them.
Yeah,
and that's how we're such a close family.
Yeah.
Like, I remember my uncle John passing away, and I was playing at Mansfield Town, and I asked the manager for a few days, obviously, for what. I said, my uncle's at the dying. Your uncle, he's only your uncle.
What's the big deal?
That wasn't like that. Like, my father passed away. My uncle Terry, Debbie's dad, was my father figure.
Yeah.
And he used to come to my house every week, once a week, and we never told anyone. Carton of a few bottles of stout, cheese sandwich, and a drop of bowl boy.
I love
that. Was a little
boy,
drop of whiskey. Little drop of bowl. So, but that all started and originated in Animal Terrace.
Yeah.
And the biggest regret I have, Debbie, I didn't have the money at the time, was that we didn't buy it and keep it.
Yeah.
I know.
Because the memories there, like, and to think all the good people that, and the Collins family, right, I probably broke them all, were pure gentlemen.
Yeah.
My uncle Terry, my dad, John, James, Dixie, brilliant men they were. And that's the legacy that I have looking back on them from Animal. But the holidays with Marie, Michael, my auntie Betty and Dixie, with all the lads and the girls coming over, was absolutely... Yeah. I can close my eyes now. I'm back in the Animal Terrace. Brilliant times.
Do you remember the times you used to go to Butland? Now it's very small all the time, and there was a load of us. But my dad used to put us in the boot and everything, and my dad get in. He'd pay him for what he wanted to. And my dad get in
that's
the boot,
right.
And then
my
dad.
Like, I'm gonna get sued.
It's funny, Jerry. I was up at my dad's grave on Sunday,
right?
And the picture on his headstone. And my mum, if she's listening, probably correct me, but I'm certain it was a picture of my man, dad, in Butland. And I remember Dan Lowry's.
Remember that?
Yeah, and I remember I'd say to my mum, dad, they'd be in the point that you could swim, and there was a big glass where you could see it at the bar. They could see you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And they'd say, swim around where the glass is, I could see her all right. But I remember in O'Connell schools, and I was always in trouble, and there was a day out to Butland, and they banned me from going, and the Christian Brothers wouldn't let me go.
Oh.
And I was broken hearted. All my mates, because you know what my dad done? He drove down. Wait for the bus to come out of the schoolyard. Drove behind the bus all the way to Butlins.
Brought you down himself.
Let me off for all the kids.
Yeah.
Right. Waited for me.
Yeah.
Drove me home.
They were like that, weren't they?
Oh,
I remember Roddy's.
And well. you were your dad's favourite. I don't upset anyone that's listening in the family. But Debbie, when you had your little studio in the house.
Oh no, that was Jer.
Oh, Jer! Sorry, you're not the favourite, Jer. Sorry. Sorry, Deb.
I was a sick child.
Yeah.
But my dad was always that strong person. Because I had asthma, really bad asthma as a child. And we had our mobile home in Wexford, Judah down in
Cork. That's right.
And we had her up in, what was the Waffle site?
Yeah. And the one I'll tell you now in a second.
And every night down there, whatever it was, I'd get an asthma attack. My dad take me out in the car, me help you out the window, and he so relaxed, you're okay. And if I get a stomach ache, he'd give me water and sugar. But always very relaxed and very strong man that I could kind of, depend on, and always made you feel. Yeah. So I'm. Can I ask you one thing? My dad always just said, I'm seventh son of a seventh son. When he was taking me, dad, I'm a seventh son of a seventh son. I was going in for an operation. He put his hands over me throat. He says, he'll be okay. I've got.
I'm a seventh son of a seventh son.
Wow. Yeah, I don't know. What's the seven of them?
It's. Well, there was James. There was Dixie. There was John. There was Terry. There was me dad. There must have been two.
There was one that, remember the one that my brothers died that years
he
ago.
He fell into the bat. Yeah, it's called it. But I remember one thing about your dad. He had a lawyer's chama, right? That about Cork Town.
Right.
That was our Hollyer's journey.
Yeah, yeah.
Going to Cork Town to us was like going to Florida. It was brilliant. And I remember we'd go into the Bardland Tank, it was called, or Dickie Bowes. And your mad group to sing.
Oh.
And if anybody in that room spoke, even if they. Yeah, dad got hurt. Betty is singing. But look, come here. I could see it all day just talking about your dad, my dad. It gets emotional, but I'm over it now today.
Yeah.
But it's very difficult, you know. Because, there were, as you said, your dad. And even up till your dad, just not long before he passed away, I remember we were in the stadium. And it was a boxing show, and I was at the main manager Shamrock Rovers just before or something like that, and I was in the toilet, a few fellas were slagging me, Collins that, and your dad was well into his late 60s, and he followed me and he said, right, I'll take him in the corner,
right,
you take the other fella if this kicks off. Well, look, this is Terry, stop please. He was such a gentleman,
yeah,
a lovely man, and oh jeez, I miss him. And I remember the phone call coming through. Right. Oh, it was horrendous. Yeah, but I remember Jake LaMotta sending your dad. Stephen was in America with Jake LaMotta when he got the call. And Jake LaMotta, the Raging Bull, the original, wrote on a big picture, keep on punching Teddy.
Yeah,
remember that?
6 weeks.
At the end of his bed, six weeks. It was the horriblest six weeks ever.
He got a lovely write up in the Star as well.
Yeah.
I can't remember who that was, but he did.
Yeah.
I know he did. He fought and fought, but.
There you go.
And as I said, I know we're talking bad, but it's great to talk.
No. Yeah, it's all good.
He's passed
many
years,
good.
But you know, he
it's
was.
All good.
Yeah. They're never be gone.
No.
Like when we sit, and Hannah's Corner will be absolutely
jammers.
A hotbed for these conversations because all my cousins, everyone, idolised me, Dad, Terry, their own father, and their uncles who were gone. It's an unbelievable family, Jerry.
Oh yeah, well
the Collins family are so tight knit. It's unbelievable. Yeah. Like I would class Christy, Jim, Eddie, and all like brothers.
Yeah.
Debbie, because they're girls, very close cousins.
Well, me and Colette, your sister, were best friends.
Best friends.
She always used to come over for her sleepover, and she's a brilliant voice.
Yeah.
She used to, my mum and her used to be singing, and she Colette sing that song, and she had a great little voice, Colette, when she was a kid.
And she still has, and she's going to sing a song in Hannah's Corner. I've nominated five people.
Good.
Kenny Lyons, the Bone Crusher, one of my mates, right? He said he'll sing too. Brilliant singer. Colette, my brother in law Mikey, my own brother Mick, hopefully he'll do it.
Right.
And Audrey.
I'll bring a few guitars up. There's a guy called Terry Lee. He's a friend of mine. He's a brutal footballer, but he thinks he's brilliant. But he plays guitar as well. So.
Yeah, well, 90% of the people that play football think that. And they're brutal.
So, what's your favourite song? What's your song?
My favourite song, I vary. Well,
if you're asked to sing a song, what's the song you've used?
Grace.
Oh, very good.
I'll sing that all day long.
Yeah, very good.
I can sing Grace.
Yeah.
Rod
Stewart does a great version of that. I play it the other time.
I play it every night.
Yeah, it's very good.
I listened to it, but he was given out to a boy last week. Oh, someone ripped into him for singing it.
Go away.
Yeah, someone ripped some traditional ripped it. Anyway, Grace, right? Speak Softly.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I can sing that. Where Do I Begin?
Where do... Oh, Jesus, we'll be there all
where
night.
Where do I begin to tell the story of this little life? And I sang a song on a live show in the Sugar Club last Thursday night. Caroline's always saying, Rod, you never sing a song to me.
Okay.
You never sing a song to me. So we sang The Wonder of You. The whole place joined in.
But
look, Jenny.
Very good.
I'll join in.
Grace is a great song. Grace, great song. I was a guide in Clemenham Jail, and I used to do the tour in that chapel every day. And if I didn't have people crying by within 15 minutes into the tour, I wasn't doing my job properly. Because we're in
the chapel. And did you sing that song?
Well, I would do the verse of it. I would sing a verse of it.
Yeah, because a girl was up on YouTube there last year. She put a brilliant thing. But
sometimes the spoken word works. Is better.
It's the best love song of all time.
As we gathered in the chapel here in Old Clemenham Jail, and you're there rather than singing it.
Yeah.
Do a vote.
Does Christy Muir do the speak before the song? Some version of it.
Yeah.
But the Rod Stewart one is brilliant because he'd done it in America. But Rod Stewart done that because the chorus, and I go to Celtic Park, is sung by the Celtic supporters. And honestly,
the O'Mara brothers from Leitrim wrote it.
Is that who it was?
Yeah, they have two brothers.
Well, if you go to Celtic Park, and this may sound mad, every time in unison that the Celtic supporters sing that song, the opposition team collapse. That is a fact.
Go away.
That is not myth. That is a fact.
Go away.
Because it's such an emotional song. You got 60,000 people singing that.
Yeah.
It's unreal.
Great song.
But it's a great song. I love it. Yeah, I love
it. We'll do it on the 29th.
Yeah. So Jan will sing the book. Are you going to do a follow up?
No.
I know Jerry asked you earlier.
No. I done the audio version. Yeah. I heard the promo of the audio version yesterday, and I'll never read that book.
Why?
I'm not a reader. Can't ever read and tell me what you think inside now. Right. No disrespect. I never read a book in my life. Peter and Jane Book One was the first book I ever wrote. I read.
I don't want to be reading that one.
I will, because it's what I'm into.
Yeah, good.
It's into educate myself about Dublin and tours.
Yeah.
But the audio, I heard a promo yesterday down in Cork. Louise, who looks after me, publicist.
Yeah.
She played. Oh Jesus! I can't wait to hear that, because in a cherry, right?
Yeah.
You're sitting it. Yeah. I don't know if you've done your own one day. You're sitting in a boot.
Yeah.
You watch a screen, and you read what you've written.
Yeah.
And I would say, "How are you, Jerry, my old pal?"
Yeah.
"How are you, Jerry, my old pal?" Yeah. I'm not saying that.
Yeah.
"How are you, Jerry?" Right. I'm jacking up, and I walk away. Yeah. They go on to London. He's had to jack him up again, twice a jacked up, get him back in. So I had to do an audition with the people in London, because they're the editors of the book. And I'm going, "I done nothing. It's nothing. I done nothing." And I'm not giving up on this. So it's mad. It's so I think it's great. Anyway, the audio one.
So is the
it's
audio
real
with
good.
Your accent or in...
Ah no, it's
posh
it's
accent.
Why wouldn't they talk posh?
Yeah. No, hello.
This is me being posh, by the way. Should hear me in the house.
Roger Collins here. That's not going to go in too well.
But you see the accent, right? I worked for News Talk for years, and I'd get into a taxi, and I'd say Castle Knock, please, or wherever I'm going. Jesus, Collins, how are you? The voice.
Yeah, yeah.
I was walking the Cliff Walk in Kilkeel, right, with Caroline. No one, one man. About 200 yards ahead of us, and I'm talking to Carolyn, because Carolyn's always a bit behind me. She's called the I won't say it. Carolyn walks miles behind me, right, because I walk fast, and I'd be shouting back to her, conversing with her, shouting
overall distance.
Yeah, but Jerry, this man stops 200 yards waiting. I walk up and he goes, "Are you Roddy Collins?"
No.
Yeah. Jesus Christ, he's a retired guard. I remember your news talk and this and that and the whole lot.
Yeah.
So me and him had a walk for an hour together, having the crack. So the voice, reckoned, was the reason why they were going to get an actor in to do it. And they reckoned, no, let him try it. And then they just went for it, you know.
Absolutely.
But I'm proud of that.
You have a unique voice. If it got husky type
That's because I never shut up, Debbie.
Well, he's horse all the time.
I'm warning him.
He's horse all the time.
I know, it's coming up to nature.
You're doing well. And I'm really surprised. Last time I met you 15 years ago, we were sparring in the ring together, and you kept saying, hold your arms up, get the air into your lungs. And I was sort of saying, Jesus, you know, my brother Stephen was shadow boxing, and I was surprised because I'd seen you on the telly, and the telly adds 10 pounds.
Ah, big time.
I was surprised when you walked in, you were so tall and trim. Then you start banging the bleeding. And he's getting into the ring with me, and I said, oh Jesus.
But Jerry, we got into the ring together, but we looked after each other. That's the nature of the Collins family. I mean, nobody ever, the one thing you could never be in the Collins family was a liberty taker.
Right.
That was a, no, no one, or a Bowsie. Yeah. That was never entertained.
No. Yeah.
They were all reared as gentlemen. And when my two sons were born, right, people would always say, boxing or football. And my answer was, well, when they're 21, if someone says to me, your sons are a gentleman, your daughters are ladies,
that'll do it for me, and you know what Jerry, it's been
said about both of them, and my grandson, good, who's with us full time, he lives with us because he's near our school,
good,
he's a little gentleman, that's why he's late dropping him into school today, Travis. But
wait, he's reading that.
Well, he, no, do you know what he done?
He'll read
the
it.
First page, right, he read it, the first couple of paragraphs, and walked out of school. And I have to text there, I'll show you on the phone.
What?
Grandad, I'm just like you. Oh, I hate school. And he never went back. He started a new school today.
Yeah. Nice, good way.
But he's a great kid. But yeah, as you say, going back, Jerry, in the ring together. Yeah. You look as fit as you did that day, by the way.
Thank you.
No, you do.
Yeah, thank you.
And obviously, you're doing a lot of walking, and that's what you do, swimming. I'm in the aquatic centre swimming most days.
Wow.
Brilliant.
Up and down like a little fish.
So we have
brilliant
to finish up now. I'm going to play Grace to finish up. But, okay, Roddy, listen, thanks a million for coming in. Where do you go from here now? What's next?
Well, I'll do all this running around for the next couple of weeks and then get back to being a plasterer next door. I'm finishing off a little job for Young Rod. And then I'm going to go to Spain for a month. I'm in for a job in England. I went in on the back of somebody else yesterday.
Right.
He applied for a job, bringing me in with him. I knew the sport director of the club personally for years. Rang him.
Yeah.
Right. Lad got the job yesterday. I've heard nothing back. I expected to be sitting in a football club today in England, and that's the truth. So I don't know what's happening.
Yeah,
you never know, Jerry.
Just take each day.
I'm not planning anything.
Yeah, give it time. Give
and
it time.
Yeah, before I let
enjoy
you go.
The moment.
Yeah.
Enjoy
yeah.
the moment, Rod.
Yeah.
Enjoy the moments around this. Because
and
they
enjoy
only come
the book
once.
And enjoy your lunch. And where can people get the book?
Bookstore.
Eason's. I was in every shop.
Is it every shop? Oh,
Eason's.
Oh, yeah. Once you get the heavy hands in there,
right,
and
okay.
behind it, yeah.
Yeah, I was showing the books in Cork yesterday.
Yeah, bring
well.
A box of them up there on the 29th.
No, Jerry, do you know
I'll
what?
I'll flag a few of you.
No, do you know what? I'm not doing that.
No, you're not.
There was a book launch in the Sugar Club last week. There was 200 people. You got your ticket and your book going in.
Wow.
Right? And Hannon's is for. I say to everyone, touch wood, if I die tomorrow, would you go to me funeral? Of course I would. Well, turn up at Hannon's.
Right.
The owner of Hannon's rang me, Granger. He rang me.
Yeah.
Richard, young Richard, and he says, Rod, can you come and see me last Sunday? And I says, yeah. He said, many expect us. I don't know. We've had about 1,000 calls. He said,
I know. Can imagine.
He said, we're going to have to take all the furniture out of upstairs. Just bare.
Yeah.
Right. And brilliant. My cousin Rory is celebrating his 40th on the same night.
Oh, right.
So I said, what am I going to do here? I can't invite all my family, and he'd be more connected to us.
Yeah.
So Rory said, Rod, I'm cancelling when I'm having mine. We're jumping into hands as well. So,
we'll
so we're going to have one Dino of a session. And the next day, Jerry, I probably want you more. We're having a session the next day in the Thomas Muir and Angel Street, an old fashioned sing song.
Yeah. Thomas Muir and Angel Street.
Yeah, me pal owns a Stephen. So everyone's booked in there. Marie, Matthew Elliott, Colin Elliott, all big Matt Susan. They're all booked in there, and we're going to have one Beano of a weekend. And after that, rehab.
Listen, thanks a million, Roddy, for joining us.
Thanks, Debbie.
And I just want to say a big hello to Kelly and Celeste, who are listening in, and Marie, who they're all listening and having their. Think that it's going brilliant, and well done on your booking.
Thanks. Can't wait to see us
coming in. So we'll finish off with this one. And there you go. That was Lifeline for today. Do stay tuned. Coming up is Northside Today with Johnny Holmes. A big thank you to Roddy for joining us. A great interview. And I'll be back. Lifeline will be back tomorrow morning from 9:30 till 11:00. Do tune in.